Welcome to the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinniston, and this is episode 28. Welcome back to the West Harlem Way Race Podcasts. The last one we did was just over a month ago, when Ian Wallace interviewed Matt Moroz. And this episode is a very special one for me. I've been wanting to interview Richie Cunningham when I started these 6 months or beginning of the year, actually January time, but it didn't quite work out. And then I realised, though, I think someone suggested that we could do it over Skype, and we thought we'd give that a try. And so last night it was great to be able to have a conversation and interview Richie via Skype, and it seems to have recorded really well. So that's given me plenty of scope now to interview others. So if anyone's out there who would like to be interviewed but doesn't live near Paisley, Glasgow, then we can do it via Skype, as long as you have a computer that you can use. So if anyone would like to take part in a West Harlem Way Race podcast, then do get in touch with me, and no doubt I'll be getting in touch with others over the next few months, and we'll be seeing if I can interview you. But anyway, the main content of this podcast is the interview with Richie. I think it lasts almost an hour and 20 minutes. We got carried away a little bit in our chat, so that was really good. I asked Richie a few questions, and then there was loads of questions on Facebook when I'd put a little comment on there asking for some ideas. And basically we worked our way through those questions, and I think you'll find it really, really helpful. Richie is a guy who's finished the race 7 times, he's won it twice, and he's gone from running over 23 hours to running 16:24 is his PB. So it was really interesting to find out just his progression, the way it's worked out for him. So I'm sure you'll really enjoy that. Nothing else on this podcast. Basically, that was enough, I thought. So I hope you enjoy that. It's now Wednesday, the 14th of November. So we're almost halfway through the month of November, which is the month that the race entries need to be sent in via Entry Central. If you need to get the details for that, just go to the westharlemwayrace.org website, and you'll see a link there to Entry Central, and you can send in your entry. Remember, you have until the end of November, the 31st of November, to send in your entry, and then once we get the entries in, then we'll work out whether we need to do a ballot or not. At the moment we have 208 applications, and I would imagine there'll be a few more coming in the second half of the month. So all those who've entered, I'm sure you'd be waiting to find out whether you've got a place. I sent my entry in last week, so I'm looking forward to being involved in the 2013 race with everybody else who's entered. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. As I say, it's an interview with Richie Cunningham, West Harlem Way Race superstar. Well, welcome to our interview for tonight. It's a great privilege to have Richie Cunningham with us. Well, he's not actually with me in the room, but we're doing this on Skype. So I've got a picture of him on my computer, looking very handsome on the screen there. And I've got a number of questions I'd like to ask Richie. And then I've got loads of questions that you've put on Facebook. So we're going to work our way through those. For those who don't know Richie, he's run the West Harlem Way 8 times, finished it 7 times. And has won it twice in 2010 and 2011. And I must admit, I would say he's probably been one of the most popular winners that we've had in the West Harlem Way. I remember that year when he won in 2010 and was introduced at the prize giving, and there was a massive applause because Richie's someone who's stuck with the race and very much loves it. So first of all, Richie, welcome to the West Harlem Way podcast. And if you could just maybe just start off by telling us just a little bit about yourself, and particularly how you got into running and ultra running in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I got into running just kind of off the back of doing a lot of hill walking and Munros. I was essentially a Munro bagger for quite a while, you know, a good few years, and a West Highland Way walker as well. I mean, I've walked the route, I think, twice over, you know, a couple of weeks at one point, and over a week the second time. But I was really more into doing Munros, hill walking. The Munro days got bigger and bigger. I was trying to knock off more, you know, hills in one day, you know, all the time, just trying to kind of up the distances and things. And then I was in a local mountaineering club, and one of the guys said, you know, have you ever heard of this hill race? There's the Carnethy Hill Race. You know, I've got entry forms and things. So I missed that one, unfortunately. But the next one up was Stuka Croin, which is, I didn't know at the time, but it's one of the toughest hill races on the calendar. So I entered that and turned up in my road shoes with my little kind of holiday maker's bum bag and things. And did the race and was absolutely destroyed at the end of it. And just thought, this is great, you know, give me more of this. Mm. So I did hill races for a few years before I got into ultras, really. So I just kind of built it up from there.
And then what was your first official ultra race? What was your first one that was over 26 miles?
I'm pretty sure it was the Speyside Way, the old Speyside Way, in the days of Don Ritchie when he used to organise it. I think that was my first, and then the same year, that must have been 2004, and then I did the Devil of the Highlands as well. And I actually had quite a decent run, you know. I did better than I expected to do, and really enjoyed it. And that kind of made me start thinking about West Highland Road Race as well. So Speyside and the Devils were my first ultras.
Right. Now, I'll say you've done completed 7 West Highland Ways. Your first one was in 2005. I've got all your times down here, which was 23 hours, 42 minutes and 8 seconds. Can you remember that first race and what it felt like and how it went?
Yeah. I mean, I can still remember going through in the car with my support team and just being absolutely terrified. I had my big rucksack packed with all my mandatory gear and everything, and my Camelback in it and all the rest of it. And, you know, it must have weighed, I don't know, 2 or 3 kilos, this thing. And I just wanted to finish the race. That was the object, was, you know, I'd seen it as the longest race in the Scottish Hill Runners calendar. And just wanted to do it and tick it off. So I finished it, as you say, 23:42, my big heavy rucksack from start to finish, and I said I would never ever do that again. And then, you know, as always happens, entries come out for the next one and you find yourself having a look, and next thing you know, you're in. So that was the first one. And I enjoyed that one as much as any of the rest, I think.
Yeah. And then each year you've done it and your times got quicker and quicker. I remember, I think probably the first time I remember having a conversation with you, we were, I was doing a run with a group of us from Time Drum to Fort William in March. And you were halfway through, or quarter of the way through, your up and down West Highland Way, where you went from Mulgay to Fort William in 2 days and turned around and then came back again. And I remember we started running together just out of Time Drum, and I asked you what your hopes were for that year. And at that point, I think your best was 18:27. And I remember you distinctly saying to me, I'd love to get under 18 hours one day. That would be my goal, to try and, whether it's this year or 1 year. And then lo and behold, you went and came third that year behind Scott and Jan Albert in 16:24. And then the next 2 years, you won the race in a similar time. So what I was really interested, what was the difference between being able to run 18 and a half to suddenly take 2 hours off that time and be right at the front of the race?
I'm not sure. I mean, I suppose I would probably put it down to that 4-day training run was, you know, one of the biggest factors in being able to do that, because I think when you do something like that, it makes something like the West Highland Way race seem a bit smaller and a bit less of a huge challenge, you know? And I think maybe mentally it just, you know, made me realise that, you know, I can push a lot harder than I thought I could, and maybe I had a lot more in my legs than I thought I had before. But yeah, I mean, I did a lot of big mileage before that race as well. So I think, you know, I suppose it was a contribution to a lot of things, because I kind of had learned to taper properly as well by that point. But yeah, I think it was doing bigger back-to-back training runs. And, you know, just kind of learning all the way.
And in those races, particularly that first one, was it your aim to go right at the front and to try and stick with people, or did it take you by surprise almost?
I think I just intended to turn up and run as I felt, you know, and I mean, I've always done that, just kind of go with, you know, what feels right and what feels achievable, and not, you know, overcook it. And, you know, I just turned up with that aim. I remember before the race speaking to Alan Young and saying, you know, Alan, I don't feel good about this. I just don't feel good. I think I've pushed my training too hard, and, you know, I think maybe I'm not properly recovered for this. But, you know, once you cross the start line, you forget all the worries, you forget all that, and you just get on with it.
Yeah.
And I think by, you know, about halfway through, by Octor Tire Farm sort of thing, I, you know, started to realise I was still in touch with the guys at the front. And then by Kinghouse, I was, you know, only a few minutes behind. And by Devil Staircase, I could see them, you know. And it was just a case of it just happened. Rather than kind of going into it and saying, you know, I'm going to, you know, be right up there, I'm going to have a great race, I'm going to run, you know, sub 16 and a half, which before that I would never have thought I was capable of. So I suppose I just did the training, did the miles, and, you know, the rest just carried me through.
And then obviously that was the race that was filmed, wasn't it? That was on the Adventure Show. And I think probably a number of people have watched that. And there was that famous bit where you caught Scott up and you encouraged him to keep going, didn't you? Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
I mean, me and Scott had done a few. In fact, we had ran, I think it was the week before the race, we actually went and did a run, a night run from Mulgay up to Drimmen, at, like, leaving Mulgay about midnight or something. Just to sort of familiarise ourselves in the first part of the race kind of thing. And I mean, we're club mates as well, you know, both run for Carnegie. So, you know, we knew each other quite well. And when I came across him in the race and he was suffering a bit, and he said to me, you know, I'm out of this, you know, I think I'm going to bail and Kinloch leaving, I've had it. And I just kind of laughed and said, oh, Scott, you know, that's just what happens, you know, you'll be fine, just, you know, latch onto the back of me and let's dig in and, you know, catch this guy. So we just kind of, you know, just kept going. I think I pulled away from Scott for a bit, and he had a bit of a fall as well, I think, and then he kind of got his pace going a bit, caught up with me, and we ran into Kinloch leaving together. You know, we met our support and, you know, took 5 minutes just to just to have some food and things. And we both headed out of Kinloch leaving together. And then up the climb onto the pass at the Larraig Moor. And Scott's just had more in his legs than me by, you know, the time we're halfway across. I could tell he was kind of hanging back. And I felt a bit bad about that, and it's a race anyway, so I said to Scott, you know, get going, you know, go and catch him, you can do it, sort of thing. And off he went, and he caught him too, you know, and he got the win in the end. So, yeah, I mean, it's just the sort of thing that that happens in these races. You're racing, you know, you're competing against yourself and what's going on in your own head and stomach and legs and things. And it's not about, you know, sailing past somebody else and trying to bury them in the dust or something, you know. It's just about whatever's, you know, if you're fit enough for it and you're good enough for the win, then you'll get it. And if not, you're not, you know. And that's it. And that, I mean, even though, you know, that happened and people say to me sometimes, you know, why did you encourage him? Why didn't you just sail on past? You know, you could have won that race. But, I mean, I look back on that race as probably been my favourite West Highland Way race because, you know, it just went so well for me and it doesn't really matter whether I was first or third or 23rd, you know.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that we all love about ultra running, isn't it? You know, that it does have that sense of support and encouragement. And I'm sure that story can be repeated down the field. You know, people who are 20th and 21st or 51st and 52nd, you know, there's lots of little battles going on like that, which are, I think, really good fun in the sense of people supporting one another, but also racing one another. Well, what about the next 2 years then? When you won in 2010 and 2011, what are your abiding memories of those wins?
I mean, it was great to win it in 2010. It was just, you know, it was just absolutely amazing. It was a dream come true for me because I'd come so close in 2009 and kind of, in a way, I wondered if maybe I'd missed my chance, you know, because that can happen, you know. You can come that close and then just, that's it, you know. You never manage to recreate it. And in ultra running, that's quite a common thing. And, you know, so 2010, I should say, was pretty special to go and win it. And there was some good guys in the race, you know. Craig Stewart, I think, had come off the back of a 7-hour 100K, and Mark Godale, he was a good runner as well. So, I mean, these guys, they took off, you know, and I had to play catch-up as usual. But got there in the end, and it was just, you know, it was a privilege to win it and things. And in 2011 as well, to go back and do it again was just amazing, you know. And when I saw Jan Albert was in the race, I mean, he's ran it faster than me, and I thought, you know, I don't know if I'll have much chance at this, you know. But I managed to catch up with him because he set out pretty fast as well. And I managed to catch him on the top of the Devil Staircase. But he came back again as I ran over the Larrig Moor and thought, you know, I've got this well in the back, you know, I must be 15 minutes ahead because I came out of Kinloch Leaven and couldn't see anyone behind. And he always wears the white top. Yeah. So I was looking for the white top all the time, nothing. So I'm kind of going across the Larrig Moor thinking, let's go a bit easy on the legs, you know, and sort of eased off a bit and kind of relaxed a bit, and then came out of Lundavra, just going into the woods, and I was going through the gate there, and I turned round, and there he was, 100 metres away, and he had a black jacket on, so that's why I didn't see the white top,
right.
And I closed the gate and thought, I'm going to lose this, you know. It was just incredible, the energy, the adrenaline rush that I got from that, because I absolutely hammered it through the woods and then down that descent. I just felt like, you know, I just started running that day, you know. It was just amazing how the mind can all of a sudden just give you that boost. And then I got down to the road and my hip was really tightened up and was really starting to go, and I was kind of starting to run a bit funny. And I thought, is he going to catch me here? You know, I raced right to the finish.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that I could have been on for a PB because my best was 16:24 dead. And I actually crossed the line there in 16:24 and 40 seconds or 40 seconds or something.
49 seconds, yeah.
Yeah, and if I'd known that, maybe I could have put an extra burst on, but probably not. But that's how much sort of attention I was paying to for the time and things, it was just a race then, just to get in first, you know, and that was equally satisfying as 2010, but just a different reason, I suppose.
Yeah,
no, that was tremendous. It's really interesting to hear that. I must admit, I hadn't quite realised it almost caught you, because in the end, you had a few minutes, didn't you?
What was that, 16:24? I think it was about 16 and a half or something in the end. Yeah, 16:30, 16:31 or something. So he slowed down a bit. But, Jan Albert's a great runner, and I've got, you know, so much respect for him. He's such a good athlete. You know, when you turn around and see a guy like that on your tail, it's pretty scary when you've ran sort of 90 odd miles and you've convinced yourself for the last hour or two that it's in the bag, and all of a sudden you think it's all gone. So I felt a bit silly there, but I made up for it in the end.
Yeah. No, well done. And it's I think it's it is such a mental race in so many ways, isn't it? You know, and as soon as you take your foot off the pedal a little bit, it can be quite hard to get going again, can't it? So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. It really is about, you know, you've obviously got to get yourself up to the fitness level and have the miles in your legs and things, but the mental part of it, you know, after that is so important, you know. And it can be just, you know, if you're two guys shoulder to shoulder with 90 miles in the legs, then it just be the one who wants it most that actually wins, you know, or the one who's least willing to give anything, really.
No, well done. I say you were a very popular winner. I think that was, is it the first time anyone's won it 2 years on the run?
No, it's been won twice before.
Right.
I think Dave Wallace won it twice in a row. And I think there's another bloke as well, a bloke Davidson, has won it twice in a row.
Okay.
But nobody's ever done it three times in a row, and that was the only reason I entered this year.
Yeah.
Perhaps a bit misguided.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, I can maybe do it, you know. I certainly won't do it if I don't enter and I don't run. So that's kind of why I had a stab this year, but it didn't work out.
Yeah, that's one of the questions on Facebook, but do you want to just give us your thoughts on this year's race, or you'd rather
not? I said earlier to you that I thought, you know, I've had a lot of bad luck this year in terms of races, and I don't know, I think the lead up to that race, things just weren't great, you know. I did the fling, and I had a bit of a niggle going into the fling, which was my IT band was starting to flare up, which I've never had before. And I did the fling, and then after that, it really got bad. The extent that climbing stairs and, you know, getting in and out of the car and things was really, really painful. I could run, and it would kind of just go a bit numb and stuff, so I just kept going with the training, and I got, you know, lots of physio and massage and tried absolutely everything, every kind of bizarre thing you can imagine. I tried it and it didn't really get any better, and I did the Catherine Trail as well, and I got through that okay, it was fine. So I kind of thought, okay, you know, if I managed 55 miles and, you know, I ran a good race there and had a PB by a long way, I thought, well, if I can get through that, I can get through the West Highland Way, you know. So, you know, started West Highland Way, and it just didn't feel good, you know. I just felt like I wasn't running properly, and I didn't really have the same power in my legs. And it's funny how that kind of then starts to affect you psychologically and things, and you just don't have the confidence to push on that you normally would. And I don't know, I think you maybe start to also notice all the other niggles and sore things that are going on a little bit more than you might normally. And by the time I hit the hills at Craiglarock, it's always a point where I feel that I can start to push on a bit and try and, you know, catch people and crank it up a bit. And I went up the first few climbs, it just didn't feel good. And then on the descent, I just felt absolutely like my quads were trashed, and I just felt totally mashed. And I got down to the road and I just thought, I'm out, you know. And I stood at the side of the road hoping that someone might pass and give me a lift up, but nobody did. So I just hobbled on and got into Octa Tire and just said, that's it, I've had it. Yeah. You know, it's not going to work. And at the time I told myself, you know, there's just no way you could carry on, you know, it's just not going to happen. You're not going to get another 45 miles out of this. This is the right thing to do, and don't ever question that. But as you do, you know, I was talking to someone the other day and I was saying to them, oh, you know, I look back at that and wish I'd kept going, you know. But at the time I said that, you know, I said, this is definitely the right thing to do. Yeah. But it was just one of those things. Sometimes it doesn't work, and that's life.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, I saw you twice on that race when I was doing the, you know, helping with the control. And I saw you at Ben Glass, and obviously I'd never seen you before because I'm normally a few hours behind you. But, you know, I thought at that point you looked as though you were working quite hard. And then when I saw you at Octa Tire when you'd stopped, you know, you did look as though you'd really gone as far as you could there on that day, at that pace anyway. You know, I'm sure you could have carried on and finished. But, you know, and I think when you've won it twice and you're used to really pushing the pace, it is that much harder, isn't it, I think?
You know? Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know. It is a factor that, you know, maybe you're less determined because I've got seven, you know, in the bag already. So maybe I'm less determined. But in some ways, I think it makes you even more determined to get another one because, you know, when you've got seven in the bag, you want 10, you know. When you've got 10, you want 12. And when you've got 12, you want 20. So it makes you really determined as well when you're topping them up, you know, that you don't want to waste one.
Yeah.
I mean, that was 50 miles for nothing. Hard 50 miles. So, so it's not easy to jack it like that. But, you know, it's one of these things you've got to recognise as well when it's just not happening.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those days.
Yeah. Well, you'll be back, I know. Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, I will be, actually. I put my entry in the other day.
Good, so. Well done.
So I'm going to come back and give it another go.
Excellent. Right, well, let's work through some of these questions then on Facebook. Some of them are more serious than others. And David Hetherington starts off by asking, why are you so slow? So
I sometimes always feel slow, I tell you, it really does feel slow.
Yeah,
but it's I don't know, it's the West Highland Way race is a slow race, isn't it?
to be fair, or a
half marathon,
it's all relative though, isn't it? If you think you're going slow, what about the rest of us, you know?
Well, that's it. Yeah.
The next one was Sirius asks, if you could put your training philosophy in one sentence, this might be difficult, but if you could just sum up your training philosophy.
I would say it's I could probably sum it up in three words. It's do the miles.
Okay.
I mean, that's basically it for me. I mean, I know a lot of people, it's different things and it's whatever suits you as a runner. But for me, it's about doing the miles. The miles and the hours, you know, is what it's about. And whether, you know, I've read some guys, you know, take on it and they think it's, you know, it's more in the head than it is about going out there and running a lot. But for me, it's you've got to run a lot.
Okay. Yeah. There's a few questions on training, so we might overlap a little bit. But Karen asks, do you follow a specific training plan or fit quality rather than quantity into a busy life? And what is your must-do session, whether it's a hill sprint, hill run, speed work, long runs? So do you have a particular program you follow, and what is the sort of the key session for you?
At the moment, I don't really follow a training program. I haven't done for quite a long time. In previous years, I have sat down and you know, wrote out a plan for, you know, 3 months or 4 months worth of training. But I mean, I always found I never ever stuck to it, just for one reason or another, you know. And now I think I know myself well enough as a runner to be able to just kind of do it by feel, really. And I don't know, I kind of think when you're training for this kind of distance, to be going out there and doing, you know, certain sessions which are very much timed and very much about effort and things, when you're out there doing long runs in the hills, it just doesn't work, because the effort comes where there's a big hill and the rest comes where there's a big descent and things like that, you know. And most of my training's on the hills, so I kind of know that, you know, like if I'm training for West Highland Way Race, that January, February, March, I'm going to have to build up a lot of mileage and a lot of hours of training. And then ease it off after that and get into some racing and kind of maybe try and do some faster runs and things and hold on to that endurance that I've built after that. But I've never really run into a plan of, you know, nothing that's kind of detailed enough to say it was a plan, but I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But in terms of specific sessions, I suppose I do go out and, you know, I've done a long run, say, on a Sunday. A Monday might be a rest day or some cross training or something. A Tuesday, you know, I've had my rest day, so you're feeling refreshed. So you go out and you hit it quite hard, you know, whatever session you fancy doing, whether it's an hour or a couple of hours, you might hit that pretty hard. And then, you know, on a Wednesday, maybe I'm feeling, you know, a bit in the legs after that. So I'll go a little bit easier on myself. And then a Thursday, you know, I'm maybe, well, you know, Tuesday was long and hard. So Thursday can be a bit more like a sort of, I don't know, a fartlek session almost, you know, and have some, you know, 5-10 minutes of really hard running and then some easier stuff and just kind of make it up as you go. But
yeah.
There's not sort of key sessions, but you're always bearing in mind that this is about training and not just running. You know, running's great, you know, and it's good fun, but you've got to train yourself as well, and you've got to be going somewhere with all this.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a plan of sorts.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Ian Wallace asks, what went wrong with this year's race? But we've talked about that a little bit, unless you want to add to that. Happy with that?
No, I mean, it was just a case of, you know, some niggling injuries and things that maybe took away the confidence more than anything else.
Yeah.
I did make some big mistakes in the taper as well leading up to it, and that was just, when I look back on that, it was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, I do a bit of cycling as cross training, or I used to in previous years, but I haven't had time to do it this year. But when it came down to the last 2 or 3 weeks of taper, I decided to hit the bike hard, and I hit it really hard. And then about 3 days before the race, I cut out the biking and things, and I think I just trashed my quads. And you know, you shouldn't do anything new just on the lead up to a race, and you know, a silly mistake.
Yeah, that's interesting. Someone who, that was your 8th race, and you made mistakes. We're always learning, aren't we?
I know. It's just, you always think you can gain an edge somewhere or other, you know, and sometimes you think you're just, you know, I don't know, I just didn't really look at what I was doing properly.
Yeah. Well, another question he asked was, Ian says, so when you think about pacing a race, for example, how does your first half compare to your second half? If you're trying to think about pacing the whole race, particularly the ones that you've won, and you've been right up there, 16 and a half hours. And I was looking at your splits, and each year, those 3 years, you were in 09, you were 8:26 to Auch de Tiere and 16:24 finish. 2010, you were 8:31 at Auch de Tiere and 16:36. And then 2011, 8:22. And 16:24. So roughly it seems to be about, you know, about equal pace between the two halves. If you say, I know it's slightly shorter the second half, but is that your aim?
I've carried splits with me on the race, but never for anything more than just kind of reference, you know, because if I was way behind, then I might start to get a bit worried and know that I had to kind of kick it up. But, I mean, I'm never really that concerned about splits and things. I think the way the pace works is that I'm naturally, I kind of try and start out, not easy, but I try and go easy on myself for, you know, a good chunk of the first half. Because I suppose I'm always looking towards the last sort of quarter of the race, you know, and trying to keep myself fresh for that, because that is where there's going to be a race, you know, from King's House onwards. If there's still other runners in sight, well, you're either going to have to catch them or get away from them. So you're going to need some strong legs there. And I've never found it a very pleasurable experience to get to the last sort of 25, 30 miles and have to really gut it out, you know, and be in really bad shape. I just don't like that, you know. I would rather, you know, take my chances and conserve a little bit in the first two thirds and then have a bit in the tank for the last third. Because, I mean, you can lose so much time as well towards the end if you pushed it too hard early on. So I prefer to kind of to pace it a bit easier and just kind of watch what's going on in front of me and then try and chase them. I'm much better at chasing than being chased.
Right. Oh, yeah. So it means that first 30 miles, you're quite happy to let some of the guys go ahead and not try and keep up with them, knowing that you can maybe catch them later.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I mean, it's worked out okay for me before, because I think both times I won it, I came from quite far behind, you know. I think I was a good way behind Craig Stewart in 2010. I think I might have been about half an hour behind him at one point.
Wow.
And then 2011, I think I was a good bit behind, and 2009 as well, I was a good 15, 20 minutes behind them. So I kind of know that, you know, there's still, towards the end of the race, there can still be 15, 20 minutes or more to play with, you know, in terms of what people can lose and what you can gain.
Yeah.
And, I mean, really, you are just trying to get the best out of yourself in a race as well. I mean, I don't win many races, so it's, for me, I'm more in tune with, you know, trying to run the best for me rather than trying to, you know, race other guys and chase them. Because, you know, most of the time in races, guys out there much faster than me.
Yeah, great. And he also wishes you all the best for next year's race as well. That was from Ian Wallace.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that's great.
The next one from Gavin Orr is thinking about your more fueling. He says, fueling for training versus fueling for a 95-mile race. What are your thoughts about how you eat and prepare yourself?
In the race, I mean, it's always been mashed potatoes and tomato ketchup and bits and pieces of other things. They are gel here and there, but I'm not a great fan of gels. They always make me sick in races, and just not very pleasant. I much prefer to keep to kind of real food more than anything. But it's hard to get it down when you're trying to run fast.
Yeah.
Coke as well. Coke's one of the best things for me. You know, I've always found if you can hold off as long as possible before you start on the Coke, and then, you know, neck a few cups of that and it's rocket fuel.
Yeah. Do you have it still, or do you not mind a fizzy?
It's better still, yeah, because it upsets your stomach a bit if it's too fizzy. You just end up burping your way up the trail, sort of thing. But in training, I used to consume a vast quantity of sports drink in training. I never went anywhere without a bottle of sports drink. And I've just kind of used less and less of that. And it's now got to the extent where I don't use any. You know, carry a couple of sweets in my pocket now. Quite recently, I ran a 5-hour run, and I think I ate a couple of slices of apple.
Wow.
And a couple of sweets and drank some water, and that was about it. And it's just been, you know, trying to build myself up so I can go further and further, just using, you know, your kind of fat reserves and things, and and so you can go further without bonking. So
yeah.
I've kind of been working on that recently, so I don't really use very much at all in training.
Right. Okay, the next question from Stephen Tennant. He was asking, what are you working towards? What is your next particular goal? What's your next race?
Next race is the Winter 100, which is in about 10 days' time, it's 50 miles on the Thames path and then finishing up with 50 miles on the Ridgeway. So it's only 3,000 feet of climb in it, so I have absolutely no idea why I'm doing it. But I just want to try and run a good 100 miler this year, really. And I haven't really had much success this year. I entered Caesar's Camp a couple of months ago and put in a really good 2 months of hard training before it, and then I picked up a horrible kind of sickness and diarrhoea bug just a few days before the race, and there was just no question I could run. I didn't even feel well enough to travel down, so I just had to forget that. So I want to run a good 100. So yeah, it's not the best for me not having many hills or much climb, but I'm going to give it a go anyway.
Yeah. Is that one, have you got a support team for that?
No, it's the Centurion Running organise it, and they're pretty good with aid stations and things. I ran the North Downs Way, which is organised by them as well, back in August, I think it was, and they had aid stations every 7 miles, right through the 100 miles, and they're fully stocked aid stations. There's gels, there's bars, there's Coke, there's, you know...
Any mashed potato with tomato sauce?
There wasn't, but you're allowed drop bags, so I had some mashed potatoes in my drop bags well. So there's the same option on this. So yeah. It goes out on four kind of spurs in the shape of a cross, the Winter 100. So it's 12 and a half miles out, 12 back, and each spur is 25 miles.
Oh, wow.
So you've got four sort of 12-mile out and backs.
Right.
So you're not too far from the kind of base in the middle, and there's a support point at the 12-mile and a support point at the halfway.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's an interesting way to do a 100-miler,
Logistically
it's much easier for the organisers, but they're up against it in the middle of November, I think.
Yeah. And presumably you'll be able to see people as well, won't you? You know, if you're on the way back from your spare...
That's right. But I think I'm anticipating that most of the race is going to be run in the dark, because it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. So it's going to be getting dark at just after 5. So after that, you're running through the night sort of thing. So if I see anyone coming, I'll turn my torch off.
Hide in the bush.
Sneak by.
Well, we wish you all the best for that one. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
The next question from Raymond Buchan, and he asks, is your training purely running, or do you mix in any other types of training, for example, gym work, weights, kettlebells, Pilates, yoga, etc.?
I do put in some biking. When I said earlier that I go cycling, I actually don't go anywhere because it's a stationary exercise bike in the spare room.
All right.
I quite like cycling actually, but it's so much easier to go on the stationary bike, and you can really work hard for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour. You can just concentrate on, you know, working out really hard on the exercise bike, whereas when you're out on the roads, quite often I'll fall out of bed and onto the bike in the morning, you know, and it's not a good idea doing that on a road bike or whatever, you know, on a winter's morning.
Yeah.
So I do quite a lot on the exercise bike, about sometimes up to 6-7 hours a week, but kind of try and mix it in. The running always takes priority, really.
Yeah.
But I've always found a good balance of the bike and the running is good for me.
Yeah.
I do a bit of gym work as well, but maybe a total of maybe 45 minutes a week at the most. I use one of these sling gyms that George Reed introduced me to, It's a kind of, it's almost like a pulley system that you have just got a hook in the ceiling and you hang it from that. And you can do all sorts of exercises with it. It's really good actually for getting a good proper workout, and you can really work yourself quite hard in 20 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So I do that, maybe a couple of 20-minute sessions in a week. But it's mainly about running.
Yeah. I do remember having a conversation once when you were on your bike before the race, you try and get used to being in the heat. Is that right?
Yeah.
And you go on the bike and you put the oven on and your fire's on and try
That's
and get...
Right. Yeah, I had a phase where in my old house I could put the exercise bike in the kitchen. So I'd put the bike in the kitchen, turn all four of the rings on, put the oven on full blast and open the door, and put the hat and gloves and things on and just, hammer it for an hour and just sweat buckets, And I remember it was quite embarrassing one day when the postman came to the party. So I think he thought there was something strange going on. But I haven't done that for a while, actually.
I'm sure Helen wouldn't allow that, though, would she?
No, well, that's the thing, yeah. But in fact, I did it for this year's West Highland Way Race. It's just because I hate the heat. I hate running in the heat. I'm terrible at it. It just destroys my race, if it's a really hot day. And you know what it's like in Scotland. You can have, 3 weeks of, like 16 degrees or, pretty coldish, mildish weather in June. Then all of a sudden you get one weekend and it's, the high 70s and we're all, getting fried alive.
Yeah.
And if you've trained for months and months and months for a race, and just that one factor is what ruins your day, then you might as well try and do something. Give yourself some insurance against it, So that's the only reason I've done it.
Mm.
And I've kind of wondered as well if maybe you get some extra benefit from training in the heat, and maybe that's why I've had some good races.
Yeah.
So I'm frightened not to do it now.
Right.
It's not very pleasant,
no.
but I don't know, maybe one year we'll get a really hot year and I'll be saying, see, I told you so.
The next question comes from Dave Waterman, and he asks, how important is running, and specifically racing, to you now that you've become a husband and a father?
It changes the whole perspective, really. It was never the be-all and end-all for me anyway, running. I really enjoy it, and, it's great, but there's life outside of running, definitely. It affects my time, I suppose, in a big way, as anyone with kids will know. You've really got to concentrate on managing your time and fitting your runs in and things. It makes that a bit more of a challenge, but you can't ditch it. It's such a great thing to be involved in, and it's such a positive thing to bring your kids up around, and it's a healthy thing to have in a family environment. So I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah.
I'm not retiring to the sandpit and the Lego box. Yeah.
Good. It's good to hear. David Etchells asks, what keeps you motivated, and do you have a strict diet?
What keeps me motivated? I suppose just wanting to achieve things, and I don't know, you always kind of wonder, am I going to get another year out of this, will I get an injury or something and that'll be it, so I suppose that keeps me motivated to keep training hard and keep trying to get to do my best in whatever races are coming up. You just think, well, I might not get another shot at this, and I just love running fast through the hills and, trails and things like that. It's just such a good thing. It's such a feeling of freedom to have 70, 80 miles in your legs and still be running hard, and still be pushing yourself hard. It's a great feeling.
Yeah.
So just the enjoyment you get from it keeps you motivated, I suppose.
Great.
And specific dietary things, I'm kind of vegetarian-ish. I eat some fish. The odd bit of chicken as well. But I try and avoid like processed foods completely, you know. My diet swung more towards a higher amount of protein and a higher amount of fat and a less carbohydrate, because there's more and more things, you know, I'm seeing more and more advice saying that carbs are not a good thing to have in vast quantities in your diet, you know, and that athletes, you know, really don't need as much carbs as they think they need. So I've been experimenting for a while and kind of eating more protein and more fat and less carbs, and I think I feel much better on it. We'll see how it goes at the winter 100.
Yeah.
But I think it just feels a little bit healthier, and I tell you one thing, I don't bonk as much when I'm out running as I used to when I was living on just carbs and pretty much nothing else.
Right.
I did have quite a lot of blood sugar problems and things in a sort of work day. And also out running, I could regularly go out for a run and 20 minutes in I'd be falling apart and having to get a pack of sweets out of my pocket or something. So it seems to have completely eliminated that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not particularly strict a diet, but lots of peanut butter is the key, I think.
Good. Sandra McDougall asks, in a typical week, how many miles would you run? And when does your training for the West Highland Way start in particular?
Probably run, anything from 50, 60 miles is a sort of minimum. Quite regularly, sort of 80 plus. It peaks maybe 100 mile week, 100 plus here and there, and then kind of drop it down. I think when I averaged out last year's training, I averaged about 85 miles a week, but it doesn't work out, you know, 85 miles, you know, 52 weeks of the year. It's very much up and down depending on what's coming up race-wise and things like that.
Yeah. I think as well, if you're doing a lot of miles in the hills, that's a lot different. If you do 80 miles on the road, then the 80 miles you do in the hills would be worth a lot more, wouldn't it?
That's right. I mean, there's generally, when I say it's 80 miles a week, it's generally sort of 10,000 feet of climb, you know, sometimes a lot more than that.
Yeah.
But a typical run for me in a day is to go up from the house and over Canoel Hill in Perth and back, which is about 1,200 feet of climb. Takes about an hour and it's about 7 miles.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good workout. So I kind of do a lot of runs based around that and add bits onto it and things like that. Add extra loops, and there's other little hills around to add on too. So there's a lot of hills in there too.
And you're training for the West Highland Way. When would you say that, right, now I'm starting to build up?
I really start getting serious about it in January, I suppose. There's been one or two years where I've left it until mid-February, even before I've started doing any significantly sort of long training runs. I think in 2011, I seemed to get cold after cold after cold. And I'd started the training right, you know, 1st of January, ramping the miles up from there, and I got to about mid-February and I kept getting these terrible colds and kind of sort of viruses and things that lingered for ages and prevented me from doing much meaningful sort of training. And so I think the fact that I had all those training weeks in the bank was actually quite a good thing, because by the time it got to mid-March, I was only really able to start properly training again. So I think if you get some early miles in the bank, it's good insurance for later on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but sometimes it's kind of towards the end of June as well. you've got to rest up a bit. And you've got to have peaks and troughs of training.
Yeah.
So I think.
Yeah. Okay. Flip Owen asks, when are you coming down to do the Hardmoors 110?
Yeah, I know. I said to somebody recently that the grand slam of UK ultra running should be the Hardmoors, the West Highland Way, and the Lakeland 100, the Hardmoors 110.
Yeah.
And to do those three would be like the grand slam of British ultra running, because they're three tough races. Yeah. You know, I mean.
Well, I've done all three, and I'd say they're tough. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, to do all three in 1 year, I think, would be a great achievement.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I'd love to do Hardmoors, and I have been thinking about doing it next year, but I don't know if I could recover in time for West Highland Way.
No, it's a bit close now, isn't it, to West Highland Way? Yeah.
There's four weeks between them next year.
Yeah.
I'm in for Lakeland 100 as well, and I think there's 5 weeks between West Highland Way and Lakeland.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, that's probably pushing my sort of capabilities. Doing that, and to throw up in the Hardmoors as well is maybe asking for trouble. So yeah. I don't know. I might be tempted. <Let's> see.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd be very happy when you do. Now, from Mike Raffan, I've got 9 questions here. So we'll see if we get through them all. But first of all, he says, what do I need to do to beat him?
And steal my mashed potatoes.
Okay. Secondly, does he always fart so much when he's running as he did for the first 15 miles of the West Highland Way 2012 race? My plan for this year's race was not to pass Richie, but it was hard staying behind him at some point.
Did you say that was me? Is that not the year we were running with Kate Jenkins? No, I have no idea. Maybe aftershave, I don't know. Squeaky shoes. That's what it was.
Thirdly, are you planning to do the Markathon this year, running every day in December?
Not this year, no. Because I don't know, I've got the Winter 100, 24th of November, and I do need to have rest days before it. I just feel that even going out and running a few miles, I don't quite recover as much as I want to.
Yeah.
It's maybe psychological or whatever, but I think I'd better not.
Yeah. At what age are you going to start training with Daniel?
He's standing up already, and he's only 8 months old. But he's not quite running yet, so I think it'll be a few years yet. Although maybe I'll get him on one of these carrier things and get them on my back and get out and do some training that way.
Yeah, that would be good weight training, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Other than the West Highland Way race, which race would you like to win the most?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really look at races like that. I mean, I think the race I'd like to be successful at the most. It's not a specific race, it's an event, I suppose. It's a 24-hour race. I mean, it's one that I've tried, you know, I've done, I think, 4 of them now over, you know, the space of 4 years. And I've just never mastered it. I really haven't. I don't think I've even managed to run past 21 hours in one. I just can't get my head around it. I just find it such a tough event, and I'm just not suited to it, you know, and I'd love to get my head around it and work out how to do one. And I feel kind of like somewhere inside me there's a good 24 hour waiting to come out, but I don't know, I just can't get my head around it. And every year when it gets to about now, you know, I start thinking, right, what am I going to do next year? You know, am I going to try and crack this 24 hour? And I never really commit to it, and then I end up doing a half-assed one, and I'm not happy with it, and it doesn't work out. So the 24 hours is the one I'd really love to master.
It is quite hard to prepare for West Highland Way, isn't it, and a 24-hour race at the same time.
I know, but then, I mean, I always thought the reason I'm not any good at it is because, you know, I'm doing all my training on the hills and off-road, and I should really be, you know, on the tarmac and running out lots of flat miles and stuff like that. But then, you know, Lizzie Hawker goes out and runs a fantastic 24-hour in Wales last year. And, you know, that was just after she'd ran a fantastic UTMB.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can do the two, you know. Yeah. So it's just me that's a bit of a blouse, I think.
Yeah.
So I just want to, I'd love to get my head around it and I'd love to work it out.
Yeah.
So maybe one day.
Okay. This is an interesting question. What is the fastest you think anyone will run the West Highland Way race in the next 10 years?
Gosh, I mean...
It's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean, the way Terry ran it this year, breaking the record and things, to have ran that fast in those conditions, I mean, what could he have done in perfect conditions?
Mm.
It makes you think, you know, I mean, Dave Wallace has done it in 15:26. You know, I don't know how much the route's changed or whatever, but I mean, it's obviously doable in that sort of time. So maybe someone like Terry could get closer to 15 hours.
Mm.
I don't know. I mean, the Western States has been done in, what, 14:45, and it's similar stats to West Highland Way. You know, about 17,000 feet of climb, I think. But I know there's a lot more descent in the Western States. I mean, I don't know. It probably would be possible to get down to about 15 hours, I think.
Yeah.
But it's the conditions are what determines it.
Yeah.
So yeah, 15 hours maybe.
Okay. So watch out the next 10 years and we'll see if anyone can beat 15 hours.
Yeah.
The next two questions, yes. What is your favourite part of the West Highland Way and what is your least favourite part?
Hey, there's a few bits I really like. I mean, when I first ventured onto the West Highland Way, when I was a teenager, it was myself and a friend decided we were going to go camping up there. It was just after it had opened in the 80s. And we climbed up from Crianlarich Station with our tent and things and our bottles of beer and stuff, our Ghetto Blaster. And we camped next to the trail, just on the hills, where you get a nice view up the glen. Not far past the gate there, actually, where you come through the gate. We camped up there and we stayed there for, I think it was about a week, actually. Just venturing down to the pub every day, playing a couple of games at pool and drinking some beer, and then go back up to the tent. And one day we decided to walk to Tindrum, and I think we didn't even get as far as off the Tyre Farm before we turned back and decided this was just far too difficult and there's no way we were capable of doing this kind of thing. And I always pass that part of the way and just have a laugh to myself.
Yeah.
Because it's like a different world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like the top of the Devil's Staircase as well, because, you know, it's a kind of, I don't know, it's a bit of a marker point in the race. You know, you're less than sort of 25 miles to go. I don't know, and it's where I caught up with Scott and Jan Albert that year as well in 2009, and it's where I passed Jan Albert in 2011 as well. So it's been a nice place for me.
Yeah.
So I like that bit as well.
Yeah, lots of good memories.
yeah. I'm not so keen. The only bit I'm not kind of isn't my favourite bit is the section along from Balmaha to Rardennan, because it's a bit flat and it's a bit early in the race and people seem to be running really fast there. it doesn't suit me at all. So it's probably my least favourite sort of bit. But I like it all.
Yeah. Good. And then the last question he asks is, if you to improve your own time, what have you got to do, do you think, to improve your PB?
Run faster. I don't know. I mean, it's difficult. I wish I knew. Maybe actually, you know, the key is to run faster and maybe pick some, you know, flatter, faster races in the lead up to just try and get my overall speed a little bit quicker, you know. But I don't know. It's hard to know, really. I don't know, sometimes just an accumulation of years of doing this kind of thing as well is all that it is, and it's just a kind of patience game, waiting until you get on top of it.
So
I don't know, run faster.
Yeah, but in a sense, when you said like this year's race, you approached it not quite in the right physical condition, weren't you? You know, and you've got, everything's got to just come together, isn't it? Your conditioning and your tapering and making sure that you just, the conditions on the day, there's so many factors and they've all got to just come into line together, haven't they?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's all got to come together. And I've been really lucky over the years because I've not been bothered with injuries, you know, that have prevented me training the way I wanted to. And I've been able to do the races and the training, you know, that I've wanted to do in the lead-ups to races. And so, you know, I've always felt pretty good by the time I've got to the start line. So I've been lucky in that respect.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you say, when it doesn't come together, you know, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Okay, the next question is from Thomas, Crazy German Thomas. And he's quite interested. He's got a few questions together, really. But he's saying, you've done the West Highland Way 7 times. He says, how does one race compare to each other? Was one the easiest? Was one the toughest? Was the first finish the most rewarding or the fastest? Does each race have its individual character? So just when you think of your 7, how do they fit together in your mind?
Yeah, they've all got individual kind of characters, you know, and there's... you know, I mean, they're all good for different reasons. You know, the first one, it's the first time. And I don't know, the second one was one where I went so much faster. You know, I was, I don't know, 5 hours quicker or something than the year before, which is not very often you take 5 hours off your previous race time. So, you know, and then, like, you know, 2009... was just such a kind of breakthrough for me to run, you know, sub 16 and a half and just kind of be up there and suddenly think, gosh, maybe I can win this. And then actually winning it and stuff. You know, yeah, they've all got their own characteristics and stuff.
Yeah. He's also interested to know how you went from being a 23-hour runner to a 16-and-a-half-hour runner. Was it the training, the mileage, consistency, nutrition? And does the race get easier each year?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of it is to do with, you know, just being able to be injury-free and to be able to keep running constantly over a period of years, you know, and keep training to, you know, and putting in that quantity of training over quite a period of years. Because so many people, you know, end up getting sidelined for injuries all the time and they don't have that continuity of training. And I think that's really important to getting the best out of yourself in these kind of races. So I think it's just been good luck in that respect. But maybe I was a bit of a slouch in my first race. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure that heavy rucksack didn't help either.
Well, yeah, that's right. That's my excuse.
Yeah. I always remember Ian telling me the first time he did the West Highland Way, he ran with a spare pair of shoes in his bag.
Oh, no.
Just in case.
Oh, yeah.
And then Matt Morose asked, what's on your bucket list? What races would you love to do that you haven't done yet?
I'm not sure. I think I'd love to do Hard Rock in the States, the Hard Rock 100. But I mean, it's so high and things. You'd have to go out there for a few weeks before and get used to the altitude and things and trying to acclimatise and stuff. It's a really difficult one for you know, UK runners to go and do their best at. I'd love to do Spartathlon as well. It's a road race, so I'm not going to be any good at it. But I'd love to do it just for the fact that, I mean, 135 miles is a pretty impressive distance.
Yeah.
It's just got this reputation of being really hard. You know, it's supposed to be such a hard race to finish. And it's incredibly well supported. You know, there's aid stations every mile or two for the duration of the race. But it's just one of those races that, you know, some of your top runners have done, you know, your top names have finished that. And to run the same course and compare yourself with some of these guys would be great. But again, it's on the road. And
it's hot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hot as well. But I'd love to do it, but I don't think it's going to happen. Certainly not next year.
Yeah.
But maybe the year after, if I can commit to some pavement bashing.
Good. Okay. Robert Kennard asks, how you got into ultra running. We've answered that earlier. Bruce, how did you discover your ketchup and cold mashed potato?
I don't know. I think the very first West Island Way race I did, I had experimented with things like pasta and mayonnaise, and it was just a kind of a progression from that, I suppose. I suppose you're kind of looking, because I'd done some mountain marathons and things before as well. I'd made the mistake of just taking gels and no real food, and realised that, you know, actually what I really wanted was a good cheese sandwich, you know, or, you know, some real food was what you really craved in the race. And I felt, you know, for West Highland Way, I had to find some real food that I could eat. And mashed potatoes are pretty good because, you know, if you mash them right down and mix them up with a little drop of milk and stuff, they're really easily digestible.
Mm.
I mean, I find that they're good on my stomach and stuff. And towards the end of the race, you can just forget the ketchup because it doesn't go down so well, and the mashed potatoes will still go in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's evolved over years of experimentation.
Excellent. He also is very keen to know what you really said to Scott Bradley, and is it available on iTunes to download?
Well, you'll have to ask Scott.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody what I really said.
And the last question comes from Karen Donoghue, and she says, do you still have nightmares about me jumping up and down on your buttocks in Chamonix? I don't know what that's about.
I finished the counselling after that very recently, so the nightmares have stopped.
So can you tell us what happened there? What was that? What was that story?
It was when I went to do UTMB. I think it was 2010, the year it was shortened, and I had. I can't remember what it was. It was an injury, some calf injury or something. And we bumped into Graham Waterworth at the UTMB Expo and got chatting to him. And, you know, I was saying, you know, I'm not happy. I've got this injury and I don't think I'm going to make it around the course. And he said, oh, I know how to sort that out. You know, come round and I'll show you know, a few exercises, and I'll do some massage and stuff on you. And so he said, you know, bring a couple of friends with you and they can help out. And it was this dynamic stretching, it's called, and so it's just a different method of kind of stretching out your muscles and things. So it involves, you know, people standing on your buttocks and walking on your back, and, you know, it's all sorts of crazy, weird things involving tables and chairs and stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how that came about. And then the race got shortened. And I mean, I'm having a pretty decent race that year, actually. But I'll never know if it would have got me through the 100 miles or not. Yeah.
She also wants to know whether you still shave your legs for the West Highland Way race.
I think I'd give them a number 7 because I've got particularly long haired legs, and it's just an absolute nightmare with the midges. It really is, because you get to ride denim and the things are just, you know, they're starting a home in your leg hairs, and even when you start running you can feel them biting away, and then they're crawling up into your shorts and all sorts. So I decided that, you know, the leg hair had to be cut back a bit. So I think I found that a number 7 is the optimum for keeping the midges away.
She also wants to know, what's the new craze after beetroot juice? Have you got any new thing that you're going to...
Yeah, it's definitely peanut butter.
Peanut butter, okay.
Peanut butter, yes. Only the natural stuff as well, not the sugar-laden rubbish that you get in the supermarkets. It's got to be the... I'm going through a kilo of peanut butter a week at the moment, I think. But it's great stuff. Put it in your porridge, and it's probably one of the best meals you'll ever eat in your life.
Excellent.
Peanut butter, porridge and honey.
And then followed by your mashed potato and ketchup.
Not at the same sitting. No.
And the final question from Karen is, are you and Helen more excited about Christmas than Daniel?
I don't think he's really even discovered Christmas yet. Maybe we're not intending on telling him about Christmas until he's about 12. So he's not really aware of it at the moment, so we probably are. I'm not really the biggest Christmas fan, I suppose, but I'll have to get my Santa Claus outfit organised.
You will.
So that will change.
Yeah. Well, that's almost an hour and 12 minutes we've been going, you know. So it's like an ultra race itself, this. But before we finish, though, I'd like just to go through these quick questions. We've answered some of them, so I won't do them all. But these are just your preferences, particularly thinking about the West Harlem Way race. So, shoes, would you wear road or trail?
Trail shoes, yeah.
Right. Your favourite food to keep you going?
It's mashed potatoes and tomato ketchup.
Yeah, I think we knew the answer to that one. Hydration, yeah. would you carry a hydration pack or a water bottle?
I've always carried a bottle, actually, a bottle over the last few years. Maybe if it was really hot, I might take a camel back for some stretches, but a bottle's better, I think.
Yeah. Would you normally carry water or energy drink or Coke in that?
It's usually a bit of each at times. Sometimes some sports drink, sometimes some flat Coke. And some bits of it just water when you're getting a bit further on and you're getting a bit sick of sweet things.
Yeah. Salt tablets, do you take those regularly?
I have taken them actually in races for a couple of years. I tend to just take them when my stomach goes a bit dodgy. Somebody said to me actually that, you know, if you're starting to notice your liquids are sloshing about in your stomach and nothing seems to be going in, take, you know, two or three salt tablets and that should sort it out. And I think I did that in one or two races and it worked. So I have carried them, but it's not something I really bother about particularly. I've been reading Tim Noakes' Waterlogged book as well, and he seems to think that it's just a load of nonsense. So... who knows, but it certainly has seemed to work for getting rid of the sloshy stomach at times, so yeah, I carry a few.
Right. Do you run with a watch, a Garmin, or do you prefer to have no timepiece?
Yeah, I run in races I just carry a standard watch, just with a stopwatch and time of day on it. I usually train with a Garmin, but I only ever have it on stopwatch and time of day. I never look at the other stats when I'm out running, because I used to and I just got too obsessed with it and I just kind of lost the whole point of what I was doing.
On the race, your support crew, would you have one team or two crews?
I always have two. I have one that takes over at Octave Tire, just for the kind of sleep aspect, and it's just kind of works out better, and it's been the way for a few years now, and the guys that do it, they've stuck with me for years. Yeah. So that's the best way, I think, for me.
Do you listen to music or podcasts or books while you're running, or do you like just have nothing in your ears?
No, I just run. Occasionally I've used an MP3 player. Just over the last couple of weeks, I've had a few runs where I've taken it out and just used it. I quite like it, actually. It's okay. But I've been experimenting because I think I'm going to use it in the Winter 100, because it's pretty flat and I just feel it might help to give me a bit of a kick later on in the race. You know, music can sometimes help you just to lift the spirits a little bit. So I've just been experimenting with it so it goes okay in the race. But I tend not to train with music and stuff because it just kind of, I don't know, it starts to get a bit annoying fiddling about with MP3 players in the rain and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
it doesn't rain in Scotland, does it?
It doesn't rain over this part at all. No, it's always very sunny and
good
and warm.
Have you got a favourite mantra to keep you going? You know, when things are going a bit tough, do you have a little saying that you repeat to yourself?
Not really. I mean, quite often, I suppose I have. One of the reasons I don't have an MP3 player is because, you know, there's always songs going about in my head, you know. And so I suppose when times get tough, you try and think of a song that's going to really G up, you know, and use that, or kind of try and think about pleasurable things. And I remember one time, I think it was this year's fling, somebody mentioned beer. At one point in the race, they said, "Oh, you know, just think about your beer at the end." And just that thought of that nice cold beer, you know, not that drink, but that thought of that nice cold beer at the end, just kept running that through my head all the way, and that kept me going. So, but no particular mantras or anything.
Right. Well, that leads me on to the question, do you have something that you look forward to at the end of the race? You mentioned a beer there. Would that be something that would be a treat at the end?
Yeah, it probably is, yeah. It depends, you know what it's like. If it's a hot day, you're dreaming about beer and ice cream. And if it's a cold day, you're dreaming about a bowl of soup, you know, a nice hot bowl of tomato soup, or, you know, a nice hot cup of tea with 5 sugars in it. But it just depends, I suppose, yeah. But all these little things are great for keeping you going, you know. So yeah, it's all little mind games.
Yeah. And for anyone listening to this who's maybe not done the race before, have you got a tip that you would like to leave them with?
Yeah, I mean, just, I suppose you've just got to go out there and enjoy it, and, you know, go into it, and, you know, don't put too many limitations on yourself. I've found that, you know, through doing the race over the years, that I've been capable of doing much, much more than I ever thought I could, you know. So go in there and really believe you can do it. And, you know, do the miles and the lead up to the race, and train for it, and just go in there and believe.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Richie. Really appreciate being able to do this interview. And hopefully it will record well, and we'll get this out on the podcast by the end of the week. But all the best for your winter ultra, and all the best for the West Highland Way next year. And we look forward to following your progress. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, John. Thanks. It's been great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Richie. I'm sure you'll agree with me that there's lots of really good advice and interesting thoughts and comments there about Richie running the West Highland Way race and other races as well. So it's the end of this podcast. As I say, if you've got any ideas of anything that you'd like to see, any features you'd like to see in the coming podcast, then do let me know. And I'll try and include those in future podcasts. So if you're getting ready to do some more races over the next few months, then all the best for those, particularly those that might be doing the Winter Ultra, in which goes from Kinlochleven back to Tyndrum. I hope that goes well and you enjoy it. And Richie and others who are taking part in this Winter Ultra 100 miler a week on Saturday, I hope that goes well, and any other races that you could well be doing. Okay, so that's me signing off, and remember, slow and steady wins the race.